John Leguizamo is approaching 50, an age when most men start to become introspective and reflect on the path that they've taken. Fortunately for his nightly audiences at the Lyceum Theater, where his new autobiographical show, Ghetto Clown, is playing, his path has been a roller coaster ride, and he's still got the energy and all the dance moves to tell it right. It's hilarious, brash, exhilarating, and, yes, moving as well. Mr. Leguizamo has appeared in 90 films, including Romeo and Juliet and Summer of Sam, and he's written and performed in four previous solo shows. Ghetto Clown is directed by another multi-talented guy, Fisher Stevens, who's an actor, producer, director, and Oscar-winning filmmaker for the documentary The Cove. And they're very pleased to welcome them both back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
So where did the two of you meet?
We met at Midsummer Night's Dream, 1988. We were doing Joseph Papp then, the great Joseph Papp, and it was my first Shakespeare attempt, and I was playing Puck, and I just studied with Strasbourg, so I thought it was very methody. So I thought, let me play practical jokes, because that's what Puck would do. So while Fisher was doing Demetrius,
yeah,
on stage in the first act, I put itching powder in his underwear for his costume change for act two, and then he comes back, and he starts screaming.
He wasn't happy,
and it wasn't... Itching powder, you know what it is? It's fiberglass. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I didn't read the ingredients. I figured I got it from a joke shop.
It's little shards of glass.
Yes. Very, very, very painful shards of
glass. It messed up his sex life for a little while.
Yeah, especially since in the play, Elizabeth McGovern, who was playing Helena, there's a scene where she gets on top of me and starts humping me. And that was one of the most painful scenes of my career. Beautiful Elizabeth McGovern actually was painful Elizabeth McGovern, yeah, thanks to John Leguizamo.
And then I was fined by a stage manager in Equity.
And then I was fined because I took shaving cream and I shaving creamed his entire room and his backpack and his
my
plays
shoes,
and everything.
My personal clothes.
And this does not sound like the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Doesn't it?
It was.
If we could put up with that, I mean, what else is part, yeah, of a friendship?
Well, were you ever worried that Fisher might try to get his revenge during this run?
I think he has. I mean, you see how much physical therapy I have to go through?
I make him do that. John, we need another dance, yeah, number in this scene. Come on, John.
I go to osteopath. I go to acupuncturist. I go to physical. It's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of dancing in this. Was that there from the start? Did you write that in the script?
The dancing was always part of it. It was supposed to be kind of like my tipping my hat, my homage to performance art when I started out, that, you know, there would be elements that were political but not really narrative, and would move things along in a non-narrative way. So that's what I was trying to do with the sort of the 60s dancing, 70s dancing, 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Well, you seem to be pretty good at all the styles in the show, b-boying, salsa, the hustle, even country music line dancing.
Yeah, that was
so
new.
Was this
that
choreographed?
That was a later addition.
Yeah, yeah.
The line dance. John is a brilliant dancer, but I definitely thought he needed some help.
That's the revenge part.
I have a friend named Marlene Ortiz, who actually is one of the dancers with Madonna and Black Eyed Peas, and was on Broadway in Tarzan, and she came in and she helped us quite a bit.
Yeah, she cleaned me up, because I just go by my feeling, you know, and she was just trying to get me to be really on the measure and then let it go, move on, because I'll just go until I feel like going, you know. That's how I dance. And she would just be a little more militant about, okay, stay to the measure and then move to something in the next measure.
You were dancing the way you might have danced at a club,
right,
rather than the way you would dance on a stage.
Right. I don't count when I'm dancing. I don't go, you know, one, two, three. I just dance, you know, and she's counting, and then two, two, three, you know.
I think the thing about I learned directing him is that when you give him a framework, that's the way to go. Give John a framework of what to do. And then he can just expand out of it, as opposed to being not sure.
You know, we thought the beauty of it too was, you know, when you do certain music and certain moves, it tells you a whole history and culture and the political climate of what was going on. You have the 60s dance, which was there was a lot of the Watusi, the Boogaloo, the Camel Walk, the James Brown, as he called, he coined themselves, and it was very aggressive and very choreographed in a way. And then you got the 70s, which is much looser and more on the ground, much more physical, which was a time with the stagflation.
But we don't want to give the impression that this is a dance show.
No, it's not.
You dance in some scenes and actually impress the audience. But this is an autobiographical thing, and there's a lot of warts and all in this show. Was it important to you to reveal how much you've screwed up in your personal and professional life over the years?
You know, if you're going to do a one-man show, which is one of the most beautiful mediums that I find, you know, the most personal, you got to go as raw and as real as you can. I mean, that's what I feel like the beauty of it is, because it is this dialogue between the audience and yourself at its rawest form. And that's why I brought Fisher to direct, because I thought he's the one who's going to be able to make me show all the warts and pimples and all the dirty stuff that you know, people would back away from. And we didn't want to back away from anything. So, yeah, I picked my career and I wanted to show it all. You know, it's not always comfortable on stage. I'm not always comfortable on stage, you know. I think there's a couple points there that I'm really incredibly uncomfortable.
Especially when you're doing a split.
Oh, yeah, well, physically, yeah. I'm talking emotionally.
Well, you reveal a lot about your family. Your father actually sued you for a previous show, didn't he?
My father was incredibly upset about Freak, which obvious reasons. I mean, now in the future I can look back and go, yes, it was a tough piece if you're a dad, you know. I mean, I reveal a lot of stuff about, you know, child abuse and spousal abuse in the house. And
But that was the truth, I suspect.
Yeah. But it's not, you don't want to see a show about it. You don't want to be a dad and go out there and see somebody doing a play about
it. Have your parents seen this one?
Just my mom's.
She's seen it probably 9 times already.
And she loves it. She does, even though she comes across as a mixed, she's both positive and there are some things she does that aren't really all that exemplary.
Yeah, well, she, you know, I've educated her through the other shows. So she's learned a lot about herself.
And Fisher, I understand that the two of you share a therapist.
Yeah. A few years back, John was talking to me about his shrink. He wasn't happy, and I suggested he goes to see mine. I think in a weird way, it's helped us in this working relationship, even though both of us aren't seeing him presently. But I feel like it's given us a dialogue and a language, and I love when John's uncomfortable on stage. I find that to be some of the most powerful moments, because he's so vulnerable and he's willing to go there and he's so brave, and it's kind of the audience is so riveted when he's at that place.
You do it every night. How don't you get past that discomfort?
I don't think so. I don't know, the revealing of the nervous breakdown thing is just I guess I start to stammer. It's the most embarrassing part, revealing. You know, when you're revealing your most vulnerable fears and you're reliving it. It's just very weird and it's hard. It's hard to do. And Fisher pushed me, and through his technique was sort of like we talked about our therapist, Dr. T, who sounds a lot like my dad, but on Xanax. This beautiful Argentine Jewish man, and so we used him sort of as a vehicle to talk about all these personal things. And. And it was like chess, because Fish would say, look, this happened to me. And I told Dr. T, and I go, wow, this is kind of similar thing that I had. And that's how our dialogue about the play would be. And then we would construct something from my life to put into that place dramaturgically what we needed for that act.
Yeah. Well, John reveals an awful lot about some of the people in show business that he probably will never be able to work with again. burning bridges here.
I like theater, though. I can do a lot of theater.
Steven Seagal, Al Pacino, Kurt Russell. Patrick Swayze is no longer with us. But if he
wrote about me in his book, which is beautiful.
He said nice things about you?
No, but it was beautiful that he wrote his point of view about that
situation.
Because you
don't say nice things about him.
Well, Patrick is a little sympathetic, a bit. But Al is – I think Al – Pacino in the play is sort of a hero to John, because he ends up in the end kind of teaching him
My best lesson was be yourself. You know, when we were doing Carlito's Way, he said, you know, I asked him what was that I needed to do to be a great actor, just be yourself. And I didn't really comprehend it. And Al was, you know, he was being Al, and I wanted to be John's version of Al, you know, as big as I could be. You know, he was telling me to do less, and I was like, I'm not seeing less out of you.
But you came out of the actor's studio. Didn't you already know that?
To be yourself, yeah, but...
Strasberg didn't...
No. That? Yeah, you know, he totally stressed being yourself, but there's another aspect to acting that's not just be yourself, too. I mean, there's always... There's a flash part of it where you... Because a lot of actors are incredibly shy people. Some of the greatest actors are incredibly shy. And they create a persona, so to speak. And that's who they live vicariously through as that character. And yeah, method, you find your own experiences, but you still want to create a character sometimes. I mean, I was never a drug dealer. You know, I hung out with them, but I was never a drug dealer. So how do you create that reality so that other – I wanted to convince other drug dealers that I was for real, you know. So I hung out with them all over Manhattan and did deals with – I mean, I ran their – I mean, I didn't run there. You know,
I think the statute of limitations.
Yeah,
is up
yeah
on
exactly.
This.
Okay, I'm shutting myself
that was in
up.
The '60s when you were 2 years yeah, old, 3 years old. Yeah,
but basically, you did some actor studio people, do, and that is do personal research. Other people, some other actors say, you know, I just read the script and I follow whatever the script tells me to do.
I think each case is you have to take it on its own merits and see, because some things you can't just bring yourself and it's enough, but a lot of things I feel like I got to do research. You know, I got to, if I play a boxer, I want to hang out with boxers, I want to be boxing, I want to be in that world. And the same thing when I started doing Mambo Mouth, you know, I did a lot of characters based on my neighborhood, but you know, I still hung out with, you know, little B-boys just to keep the flavor in. And then I hung out with a lot of transvestites to see what that flavor was about and just spend time with them from the method years, you know, just really want to do research.
But did you have to research your own life here? Because I'm sure you didn't remember all the details.
No. You know, this was a long, long process, yeah, man. I've been working on this for at least 7-8 years, if not more. And it started off, I didn't want to perform anymore, so I was trying to avoid it, and I tricked myself into doing it by doing college talks, and I would just, you know, take my resume and do index cards, and I'd get really drunk before, and drink during the show, and I would just talk, and all of a sudden the kids loved it, and I'd run home quickly and write the show before I passed out, but all of a sudden doing that and doing it, more memories came, and that's. By the time Fisher came in, that's what it was. It was a collection of all those moments. And then with Fisher, we fleshed it out even more and brought more of the personal life.
We're talking about Ghetto Clown, John Leguizamo's one-man show at the Lyceum Theater with John and Fisher Stevens, who directed. You mentioned that you used to get drunk all the time. I understand that booze sales are the highest for this show.
We had the highest liquor sales.
So do you see this as a kind of like a nightclub experience, only in a much larger
venue?
It
shouldn't be. It is a play. And I have to say, it's depending on the night you see the show, it's a very different experience. I'm, you know, in the audience, so I'm right there. I'm with them. And on a Friday, Saturday night, it's very – and a Sunday, even the matinees are pretty wild. People decide they go to brunch and they show up to the show after a bunch of mimosas or something. But
and they yell out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does that distract you or
– You know, it sometimes it feeds me and sometimes it does distract me. I'm not going to lie. You know, if people are hollering and yelling crazy stuff, like – I want to have sex with you right now, and I'm doing a scene with my dad. It's just really weird. It makes no sense. And then, like, Mondays and Tuesdays, people are much more quiet.
It's a mellower
night. It
feels
much more like a play.
Yeah, you feel like
you're Virginia Woolf. So if you want to play, come Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. If you want a rocking, crazy concert, come the rest of the time.
Yeah, it's I've never people get thrown out on a weekly basis at the show because they're just so rowdy.
But they're the nicest people that
they're great.
They've ever thrown out their apology. You go, I'm just trying to have a good time. I just got too loud. I'm sorry. Please don't throw me out. Sorry, you got
to
go.
Sometime, I guess, they decided to sell that you can take plastic sippy cups into the theater full of alcohol. And most people are enjoying those cups during the performance.
It's like supersized McDonald's.
I don't know when they changed that rule, but
it was about a year ago, right? Wasn't it about a year that Broadway allows drinks to come to your seats now?
It's pretty wild.
You go to every show, Fisher?
No, I went to pretty much every show up until after opening. I go once or twice a week. I mean, the beauty of working with John is he keeps wanting to make it better and better, and we do. I think we keep improving it. We're still working on it.
Now, John reveals in the play that he really got into acting because of a math teacher
Mr. Zuffa.
You thought he was going to punish you, and instead he said, since you act out in class all the time, maybe you should go study with some acting teacher, and that got you started. But, Fisher, I heard that your mother rented out your apartment part-time to a theater company, so Did you grow up with a theater company in your living room?
Yeah.
That's a play right there.
Yeah, it was
or a sitcom.
Yeah, I know. John's going to direct my one-man show next.
Absolutely.
We were living in the meat market in 1976, 77 in a loft. My mother wanted to be a painter, was trying to be a painter and having trouble paying the rent. And she was dating a actor slash waiter. And he had studied acting, and his teacher lost his lease on a space, and he came over to our loft and said, I'll pay most of your rent if you let me start teaching. And we had these banquettes, and they built the banquettes into a stage, and there were three acting classes a week in my living room on 13th and Hudson, which now is a cool, trendy neighborhood. But back then, like walking the dog, you took your life into your hands. And it was called the Actors Institute.
And did you learn from that?
Well, I had no desire to be an actor. I was, you know, I was 14 years old and going to high school, and I found it much more interesting watching those classes than sitting in my classes in school in high school, and that's how I became an actor, sort of out of
necessity. You started performing on the theater when you were 17 years old. Your first
Yeah, well, like 15, 16, off Broadway, and then I got on Broadway in Torch Song Trilogy when I was 18. But that's basically that was it, and I loved it. So,
was your big break, John, Miami Vice?
Well, big. I mean, I was terrible, and I sucked horribly in that show. It wasn't just my fault. It was the writing was pretty. It was like towards the end of Miami Vice, and nobody cared. Nobody gave a damn about the quality. They were just, you know, it's like a factory. And but you know that it was that got me my agent. You know, my first agent at DBA, and Robin was her name, and she became my agent, and that's how I started my career. She sent me out for Casualties of War and stuff like that.
And that's where you learned that method acting can sometimes be painful.
Sean Penn was another great teacher.
Yeah. Carlito's, that was Casualties of War with Brian De Palma and Sean Penn. And we're doing a scene where, you know, we're Vietnam soldiers and we've kidnapped this girl and they want to do some crazy rite of passage. And Sean's supposed to slap me. And Sean really slapped me because he really thought he was in Vietnam in 1969. So he's slapping me for real and we're doing lots of takes. And all of a sudden, I feel like I'm in Punked in Ashton Kutcher's, you know, show, and because nobody's calling cut, and I'm being slapped and take after take, and I had to just stop. I couldn't take it anymore.
You also had a television show for a short time. I have to tell you that the scene that you showed from House of Buggin' about the Crips and the Sharks fighting each other was hilarious.
Thank you.
Well, was that?
I thought the show was hilarious too. I thought the whole show was incredible.
So you're bitter that it just didn't get any ratings?
I'm bitter that they canceled it. I mean, the ratings were fine. I mean, they weren't what they wanted, you know, but they canceled it. They wanted me to basically what they would tell me, the studio said, this is the bottom line, John. We'll keep you, we'll keep the show, your format, everything, but you got to fire everybody in your cast. And I said, there's no way I'm going to do that. These people work with me. They help create the show with me.
I told them the same thing at the time.
Yeah, well, too many of those people were members of your family and that is, or your best friends. That's a whole other issue. We're running out of time. I just want to find out. You're now also in The Lincoln Lawyer?
Lincoln Lawyer, right, with Matthew McConaughey.
And how long is Ghetto Clown going to play?
We just got extended to July 10th.
And Fisher, you have expanded beyond just – well, I don't want to say just acting.
Right.
Acting, directing. You've also done a couple of documentaries, won an Academy Award for The Cove.
Oh, brilliant.
And I understand you have a new one called My Decision?
Yeah. I'm working on one called My Decision, going around the world, interviewing people about major decisions in their lives. And actually, I produced a film that's playing right now at the IFC Center called Blank City about the New York film scene, the beginnings of it in the
Big
70s
hit
and
too.
80s.
Yeah, got incredible really reviews.
Yeah, so excited about that. And I'm in a film called Henry's Crime with James Caan, who decided to Sean Penn me while we were shooting that.
Oh,
although tough guy. We talked about that the other day with the director.
Yeah, Malcolm and Keanu, right? Yeah.
But I want to thank you so much for being on our show, John Leguizamo.
Oh, great to see you.
His show, Ghetto Clown, now at the Lyceum. Fisher Stevens, directed.